You're listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast, your weekly podcast looking at all things Warhammer.
Hello and welcome to episode 115 of the Sprues and Brews podcast. My name is Dave and I'm joined once again by Matt.
Hello.
And Jay.
Hello.
How are we doing this week, guys?
Not bad at all, thanks. Yourself?
A little bit under the weather, but I'm okay. I'm motoring through. The podcast comes first, Matt. The podcast comes first. Speaking of which, we've got quite a bit to get through this week, including the brand new box game for Warhammer Underworlds, Dire Chasm. Matt, you have got a copy and you're going to be taking us through it later on, I believe.
Will indeed.
Fantastic. We've also got all of the latest news, including some offerings from the Black Library. And we've also got our top three hobby gift ideas. It's a bit of a favourite one of ours about this time of year. If you were buying presents for your friend in relation to the hobby, what would you get them? So we're going to talk about those later on. And we've also got a couple of top three picks as well. Before we get stuck into all of that content, however, let's talk about what we've been doing in the hobby this week. So, Jay, do you want to start us off?
I've been painting Impale Fists. So I've got my Contemptor Dreadnought pretty much done. He's just waiting for a gun to be delivered from Forge World, which has been... It was ordered quite a while ago, actually, so I might have to email them to find out where that's got to. I don't think it's even been dispatched yet, even though it is in stock. So he's just waiting for his Volkite cannon, but the actual Dreadnought himself is done and the base is done. I've started work on the troops now, so I've got one of the Terminators fully painted up now, and I've started work on the remaining four in the squad, so putting all the Agrax surf shade into the recesses and things like that. I have been putting some finishing touches on some Dwarf Blood Bowlers, the Carrot Crushers. We got the rule book, when was it, last week? So I've been having a flip through that, and the Dwarf team, they were almost finished. I needed to do the bases and put the transfers on and highlight a few gems and things. So I've just been working on those. I'm going to give them like snowy bases, so they're playing on like a pitch covered in snow. I mean, it'll look quite cool. I think that's it. That is it.
That's quite a good haul. I do like the shields on your Terminators. They look really
Storm
really cool.
Shields. Yeah, they're Imperial Fist. I think they're called Vigilus Storm Shields. They were like a prototype Storm Shield in the Horus Heresy. So they actually give a 3+ invulnerable save. So I don't think normal Storm Shields even existed back then. So I think these are like your prototype Storm Shields, really. But yeah, they're like, if they didn't have the Imperial Fist icon on them, they would make brilliant shields for Custodians, because they've got like the eagle wings and things on. They're really smart. They look solid, like proper slabs of adamantium.
we'll see what your saves are like when we finally get to have a game. Awesome stuff. Matt, what have you been up to?
So it's been a busy week for the hobby. Obviously, we've got a Dire Chasm review coming up, and I painted the contents of Dire Chasm over a couple of nights. They're really nice models. I mean, we'll go into a bit more detail later on in the show. But yeah, thoroughly enjoyed painting those up. And then, for a change of pace after then, over the weekend, I painted up Abaddon and Loken. They're so nice models.
Yeah, they're really nice. I really like the diorama as well, like Yeah, I really like how the scenic base sort of has them facing off against each other.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. Captures the battle on Istvan III. It's, really cool. So, and I've started, just before we started recording the podcast, painting up the Justarian Terminators that are going to be Abaddon's bodyguard as well. Nice. Pretty much exactly the same scheme as Abaddon. I was experimenting with Death Shroud Clear, which is a black gloss airbrush paint, to cheat a little bit and get away with having to do much in the way of highlights on them. And I think it's turned out pretty well.
Yeah, they look really, really cool.
So like I'm going to do my 40K. Beetle. Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to do my 40K Black Legion in the same scheme as well.
That makes sense. Yeah, it's a really, really nice finish on them. And I really like the sort of work on the faces and stuff you've done on these guys. And I'm still very much in love with the colour of those Sons of Horus, that green.
Yeah, it's a nice green, isn't it?
It's a very nice green. Very, very nice green. Do check out our Twitter for those images. I don't think we've got any of your Imperial Fists up there yet, Jay, but we'll
They're too busy preparing the walls to be standing there taking photo shoots, Dave.
That's, that absolutely makes perfect sense to me.
Propaganda for the loyalists, I suppose.
Yeah, that's that makes perfect sense. Well, guys, I caved, to put it simply. I think maybe on the last show, I was making my stance that I would not be getting involved in the Horus Heresy whatsoever, and that I had far too many projects on the go, and that I wasn't interested. End of story. That's it. So, of course, I'm building a World Eaters army for Horus Heresy. And, well, I'm kind of cheating a little bit on this. I am building a Horus Heresy army, but it is also going to be usable in 40K, and I'm going to be mainly, well, kind of maybe 50-50 Forge World models and the current plastic kits, because the World Eaters are kind of, well, they're already a bit gone, aren't they, by the time they get to Terra. So
yeah, you can get away with it, especially with a Legion like the World Eaters. Like you say, by the time they're on Terra, they're basically turned, they're Chaos Space Marines at that point.
Yeah, so I suppose it's worth saying you're using the Chaos Terminator kits, aren't you here, Dave, not Space Marine kits?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I'm using Chaos kits. So I went and got myself a box of Raptors, and also a box of your generic Chaos Space Marines. They're all built and primed. I've done a tester model, which I was just tidying up a little bit earlier on before the show. I'll try and get him based this evening, and then I'll crack on with the rest of the Raptors then. But I'm really excited. I've been looking at the rules for Horus Heresy, what they can do, the kind of list that you can build with them. Like you guys, I want to kind of start small, couple of units. Definitely want to get myself a Contemptor with a couple of close combat weapons, because I can't see me using much in the way of ranged weapons. I just don't think that's the World Eater way, really. So not many bolters, not many heavy weapons. I just want to punch things in the face, pretty much with this army. So and that works well in 40K as well. I actually watched a World Eater battle report for 40K the other day, which was really fun. So I'm really looking forward to trying them out. So I hope to have maybe 1K ready by the new year. Hopefully ready for when we can actually roll some dice and play some Warhammer. Aside from that, that's probably it for me in the hobby, I think. And I think that rounds out this opening segment quite nicely. So we'll take a pause and we'll come back with all of this week's news. So what do we have in this week's news, Matt?
Well, Dave, on Saturday, we have got the new Codex Death Guard up for pre-order. Would be what I would be saying if it hadn't been delayed until January.
You get.
So, yeah, obviously we know that there's been some supply issues and the like, with a knock-on effect of COVID restrictions. So Games Workshop made the decision last week to delay the release of the Death Guard stuff, which is a shame, but understand the circumstances. This is probably the last pre-order week until Christmas, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
So if there's, you know, Death Guard late to the Siege of Terror as well. I'm sure they're one of the last traitor legions.
So unfortunately they're delayed. However, we still have some cool stuff up for pre-order. So for Blood Bowl, we have got cards, dice, and pictures for the dwarves and the Skaven. So you say you've been painting up your dwarves, Jeff. Perfect time to get the new card packing dice for them.
Yeah, I've got the dwarf dice, I think, from the first time round. If these ones are different, I don't know, but I have got some dwarf dice. The cards I will be picking up, though, yeah. I've already got a pitch.
They're really handy. And in the new cards, there's blank cards for you to then adjust the stat lines as they get upgrades and stuff.
Right, yeah.
Excellent.
So really handy. Handy hint, if you've got some transparent card sleeves and then use a dry wipe pen, you can reuse them.
Yeah. You can wipe the blood off them when you guys get...
You can wipe the blood off, yeah. And the Skaven / Dwarf pitch is also getting a re-release as well. And it's been updated to the second season style. The dugouts are a lot more slim than they were in the original one, so it fits on the table easier.
That's good.
So yeah, really cool. For Necromunda, we have got the House of Artifice coming out. This is the new House of book dealing with the Vanstar and all the technological shenanigans they've been up to. And alongside that book, the Archaeotex and the Neotech kit are coming out. These are your cyber-enhanced gangers who look really, really cool. And as ever, dice and cards along with that. For Space Wolf fans, there's a really, really cool thing coming out from Black Library. Hellwinter Gate, limited edition in a big box, coming with the book, dice in a Space Wolves kind of iconed dice bag, Space Wolf bookmark, Space Wolf pin badge, Space Wolf coaster, and it looks like it also comes with a little supplemental book with data sheets for the characters from the book as well.
Oh, that's cool. So
it looks ridiculously cool. I'm guessing it ain't going to be cheap though, guys.
No.
And if you're not on the Games Workshop website at like 5 to 10, you're not going to get it either. But yeah, it looks very, very nice. And I'd love to add it to the collection, but I feel it may be a little bit out of my budget this week. Because on Friday, I'm going to be ordering the Cerastus Knight Atropos from Forge World. This is a pack of two Atropos Knights with their ridiculous... I think it fires a black hole inside of the target. That's the way to deal with anything on the battlefield in Adeptus Titanicus, isn't it?
Sounds pretty effective in all forms of warfare, to be fair.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So, yeah, they're up for pre-order from Forge World on Friday. So this will be a resin kit similar to the recent Mechanicum Knights that came out. So, yeah, looking forward to building them because I love the 40k scale one.
Yeah.
So even though the Death Guard have been delayed, there was a little bit of Death Guard info on Warhammer Community, wasn't there, Dave? I think every day this week they're sharing a little bit from the book, and today they had some info about how they move and fire weapons and stuff.
Yeah, well, they had the inexorable, however you pronounce it, advance in the last codex, but it kind of lost some of its effectiveness when 9th edition landed, because vehicles could move and fire without penalty anyway. So that kind of ruling in the Death Guard book was kind of made redundant. So it's been updated. All infantry can move and fire heavy weapons without penalty. The really tasty stuff is with your demon engine, so like your Plague Burst Crawlers and such, when they're in combat, obviously you've got the big guns never tie rule where they can fire into combat as long as you haven't got a blast weapon, as long as it's not a blast weapon. However, you're a minus one to hit normally. Death Guard, don't need to worry about that. They will still fire at their full ballistic skill, even in combat. So that's really cool. And also, they can ignore movement, charge, and advance modifiers to their movement, which is really good. So, I mean, the Death Guard aren't very quick anyway. They're like some of the slowest Marines. So with this ruling, it means that a lot of stuff that would slow them down, maybe like... Is it the repulsor field on your grav marine tanks that are like minus two to your charges? They'll just ignore that. They'll be just charging as normal. So I think that's quite a powerful ability, really. And it certainly makes up for the slight slowness of the Death Guard, or the majority of the Death Guard anyway.
Yeah, it sounds really cool. It's a bit like the old slow and purposeful in 30k.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so really, really cool. Obviously, hopefully into next year, we'll have a little bit more info about those. We also had at the weekend a Black Library preview event. Normally at this time of year, there would be the Black Library Weekender, where they'd pretty much unveil all the new books that are coming out over the next year. Obviously, they've not been able to do that this year, so they did it online like they have done for the other Game Talk previews. Now, I'm not going to spend too long on this. This will be more of a rapid-fire run-through, kind of the big titles on there. First of all, being the next book in the Siege of Terror series. We're all super into the Siege of Terror at the minute, and I think it's possibly the best series Games Workshop have done. The next book is called Mortis. So, as much as I hate to admit it, Dawn and his lads have put up quite a pretty good defence of the Imperial Palace, haven't they?
They have.
So, after the events of Saturnine, I think Horus is a bit miffed, so deploys the entirety of Legio Mortis to knock the walls down. And in retaliation, the Emperor, or more likely one of his regents, I suppose, deploys the entirety of Legio Ignatum. We have got two entire Titan legions fighting over Terra. This should be an awesome book.
Yeah, I can't wait to read this. It's going to be awesome.
Now, on the interview, John French said that parts of the book are from, you know, the point of view of the Titans, but a lot of it's from the point of view of the infantry looking up at these giant god engines fighting each other, which is something we've seen quite a bit through the Siege of Terror series, and it's a nice little, I suppose, point of reference, isn't it, to just normal dudes fighting in the trenches, seeing all this around them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was the book Titan Death, which was a focus basically on all the Legios fighting, wasn't it? That was like the last ditch that...
Dawn sent out to sort of slow. Basically, if all the Titans can die outside of the solar system, then it's less Titans on Earth.
Yeah.
So it's like a last gambit. And that was mainly engine on engine. And I think that did lose a bit because it's much better when you get the perspective from on the ground. So like in Master of Mankind, there's a cool scene between some Legio Ignatum and the Traitor Legions, Legios. And it's much more impressive set against like all of the, you know, puny ants fighting around the shins. Yeah.
No, we've not read this yet, but I'm going to put this out there. No spoilers. I imagine any infantry that are going to be fighting alongside these Titan Legions are probably not going to be back in the Imperial Palace for tea, are they?
Well, I'm sure Sanguinius has already killed a few Titans in the book series so far. I'm wondering whether he's going to take any more Warlord skulls in this book.
Yeah, this is true. I mean, the entirety of Legio Mortis does sound like an awful lot of Titans. And, you know, at this point, there might be demon-possessed Titans as well. So, yeah, it should be some really cool stuff. So, really excited to see that. I know you guys have read the first book or two of the Dark Imperium series. The third volume's coming out, God Blight. And they have actually gone back and adjusted the timeline and a few bits in the first two books just to bring it in line with the current Indomitus storyline, which is a really nice touch, actually.
It's a very interesting touch. I don't think they've ever done this before.
No, it's the closest thing I can think of is Tolkien going back and editing The Hobbit slightly to make it fit Lord of the Rings. So it's not massive. It's just not massive changes, but just to make sure that it fits the current storyline, which is great. It means that from a narrative standpoint, you're never tied to what's come before. You know, there's lots of inconsistent and potentially untruthful storytellers within the 40K universe. So you can easily shift things around without it being lore. And again, that's something that we've seen in the Siege of Terror series. So, yeah, really cool. Want to read that. If you're a fan of Ultramarines, Graham McNeil is bringing out a new Uriel Ventus novel, The Swords of Kalth. And alongside this, there's going to be an Uriel Ventress model, which I believe is out in February as the Black Library model this year.
Yeah.
It looks right. I'm not terribly fussed on him, but you know, if you're an Ultramarines fan, it's probably more your cup of tea.
Well, actually, I quite like the pose of this guy and I really like his sword. And I think I might get him and convert him slightly for the Death Watch.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty cool Death Watch. Have you noticed that his armor is slightly different than regular Primaris armor? It's like squared off.
I've painted a lot of 30k models over the last few days, and he's got lots of elements of 30k era of kind of stylings on there as well.
Yeah, I think he's cool. Like you say, he's got all of the sculpted Ultramarine stuff on him, so really Ultramarines or Death Watch, like you say, Dave, it'd be cool as a Death Watch actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? A really nice head sculpt as well. He's not a pretty boy. This guy's been in the wars.
Yeah.
So, yeah, really nice model. If you're a fan of Dan Abnett book, the second Beckwin novel, Penitence, coming out alongside an absolutely gorgeous limited edition with a kind of tarot-style cover, which looks really pretty. And if you've missed out on the first book, Pariah, that is getting re-released because I think it came out 10 years ago or something like that.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, quite a few of the books were announced. Most interestingly to me is the Liber Xenologist. So if you've seen some of the old kind of art books that Games Workshop have put out, they tend to do these. This Liber Xenologist is essentially an in-universe book written by Yanis Drake from Blackstone Fortress, chronicling all these unknown xenoform species.
That's a big tease, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think it's quite interesting as a concept, really. It's quite fun. You know, they can put random... In the past, these kind of books have had, like, the random concept art that they've done and never gone anywhere and random fun bits that could, you know, they could latch onto at some point in the future. It doesn't say they definitely are, but a nice little, I don't know, little tome set in the universe is quite fun, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, I think it'll be a really good read.
We are also getting an interesting book. So we've had the Primarch series detailing each Primarch, and they're nearly all out now. They're following this up with a series detailing major Xenos characters across the galaxy. The first one is Ghazghal Thraka, and it is the story of Ghazghal Thraka as narrated by his standard bearer Makari.
That's ace.
I mean, as a concept for a book, that's brilliant. for Age of Sigmar fans as well, we have got Git Slayer, the next Gotrek Gernison model set in the Mortal Realms. He is fighting the Grots.
Good fight, yeah.
And we have got End of Enlightenment, a new Lumineth Realm Lords book starring Teclis. So yeah, really cool stuff. I am intrigued when we're going to get these and if we get any nice new stuff within that Lumineth book. Because I know we haven't really seen him in any novels yet, have we?
No, I think there was one Lumineth model novel released with the launch box set, and now this one, yeah. But I mean, yeah, it will be good to get some novels. I've not really read many Age of Sigmar novels. I've sort of just been digesting the lore from the campaign books and battle tomes. But yeah, it will be cool to see the universe fleshed out.
I've been meaning to catch up on the Gotrek Mortal Realms books. I've only really read the short stories so far. So Git Slayer sounds awesome, but I really need to catch up. I think there's Realm Slayer, isn't there? And I think there's one more.
Have you listened to the audio dramas?
I have not yet, no. You
absolutely. I know you don't like audio books, but an audio drama obviously is acted rather than just telling the story. Yeah. And it's got Brian Blessed in, so which that's is awesome. An instant sell, isn't it?
It is. Definitely an instant sell. Excellent stuff. Is that all the news for this week, Matt?
That is all the news this week.
Fantastic. We're going to take a pause and we're going to come back with Warhammer Underworlds. So, Matt, I believe you have a copy of Warhammer Underworlds Diachasm in your hands. Do you want to take us through this new shiny box?
Yeah, so obviously Warhammer Underworlds is in its, what, fourth year now? Yeah. And it kind of came out of nowhere, didn't it? It's an interesting game. I think it's found a niche in the market, being a combination of a board game meets a miniatures game meets a collectible card game, essentially. Yeah. So if you've not played it before, basically you pick your warband, which is between, what, 3 and 6 models, maybe, depending on the warband. So not a massive amount of models to paint up. And they all come printed on coloured plastic as well, if you don't want to paint them up. So making it really accessible for people who aren't into the kind of war game stuff. And you build a deck of cards. Part of the deck will be kind of power cards and upgrades. And you'll also make a deck of objectives that you guys are trying to accomplish over the game. Really fast-paced game. Essentially, you've got 3 rounds. And within the round, you can make 4 actions. So over the entire game, you're going to make a total of 12 actions. So it's a lot more fast-paced than you'd expect in a game of Warhammer Age of Sigmar or something where... If you do make a mistake, you can come back from it. In Underworld, you've got to very much, I suppose it's a bit like chess in that regard, where you've got to think a couple of turns in advance.
Yeah, definitely.
But that said, it is really kind of easy to get into. I think the best way of describing it is kind of like simple to learn, but difficult to master.
Yeah, that old chestnut of a saying.
That old chestnut. And because of that, it's a really popular competitive game because... Not only have you got the deck building element, you've got how to use that deck. So anyone can take a net list online and build the perfect Underworld deck if you don't know how to use those 12 actions that you've got right. So Diachasm is the latest edition of this, and Games Workshop have pretty much kind of refined this every edition, shaving off any of the kind of like rough edges and distilling it into its purest form. And so that's what we've got with Diachasm. It's not a massive change from the previous edition of the game. There's a few little tweaks here or there. So, for example, the support rules in previous editions of the game. If your opponent had more support than you, it negated it. Where now, if you've got one guy next to you, you can count 1 support results. If you've got 2 guys next to you, you can count 2 support results. Where previously it was a bit like the marking rule in Blood Bowl, where it was negated by another support. That doesn't happen anymore, making it a lot easier to follow, isn't it? Because I think it's rare that we've actually done the support correctly in the past, or even it's even come up. So
it's always one of those ones you have to keep checking, isn't it? It's not one that's intuitive, I find.
Yeah, exactly. So now you've got a guy next to you, you get support, brilliant. That's much easier, and it's you're going to be more likely to get successful results, but then on the other hand, so is your opponent. So again, keeps the game moving super quickly, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The other change that you get, if you take out a fighter with 6 or more wounds, I believe, off the top of my head, you now get 2 glory points as well. So those big wound characteristic fighters had a bit of an advantage really in the past, where now you've got to be careful because you're giving away 2 glory points to your opponent if they get taken out.
Yeah.
So again, not a massive change, but kind of a good tweak. And that's really all the rules that have changed within the main rulebook. What they've done instead is added some more mechanics as additional cards in the deck. So Primacy is a new mechanic that if either player has a card in their deck that references Primacy, you then use the Primacy rules. So this is a new element to the game that encourages you to try and get what's known as the Primacy token. So this token gets given to a fighter that takes out a fighter with no wound counters on them. So Dave, if you've got one of your characters, he's not wounded at all, I take him out in one shot, I get the Primacy token.
Okay.
Brilliant. But say if we're playing a 3-player game and Jay takes out one of my characters who's got no wounds on him, he gets the Primacy token. In addition, if you take an enemy leader out of action, you get the Primacy token. And if you hold 4 or more objectives, you get the Primacy token. So this will keep passing around until the end of the round. At the end of the round, whoever's got that token gets to flip over one of their spent glory tokens.
Ah, so you get glory for free, basically.
Free glory, yeah. So you're not getting additional glory, but you can spend it again. So how often have you had games where maybe you're struggling with objectives and you've got a load of upgrade cards that you can't use because you're struggling for glory, and then you're going to struggle to get your objectives because you haven't got anything to power them up?
Yeah.
Nice little thing that plays off that. All of the cards that reference Primacy as well will have some kind of buff, like, I don't know. I mean, it might be an upgrade where if you hold the Primacy token, you can reroll all the dice. So it gives you something, you know, to go for if maybe glory is slightly behind and you need something just to level the playing field. I can see a lot of people putting some Primacy cards in their deck just to unlock that, because it is pretty powerful, really.
Yeah, especially for those warbands, maybe, like you say, the more elite ones that can't, you know, they struggle to capture objective just purely based on numbers, like Molog, maybe even the new Auruk Brutes. We only get 3 of them.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, so what I do find interesting, though, is that's been added in the extra cards deck rather than being a rule in the main rule book.
Oh, interesting.
Which means that you can... Yeah, if you're being cynical, it means that you've got to buy the new cards in order to unlock that new rule.
Yeah.
Where, on the other hand, it means that they can add additional features like this through expansions as well in the future without having to tie it to the rule book as well.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, I think that's pretty interesting. The other new mechanic, now, Hunter and Quarry were new kind of keywords that we got back in Beastgrave. The other new mechanic that we've got is Hunger. So there's not many cards that reference Hunger. However, Hunger represents... Beastgrave, the mountain that we're in, which is where the setting is a living mountain. And the storyline is, because the Cataphrane Cursors has leaked into Beastgrave from Shadespire, it's the people who die within the mountain aren't staying dead. They're coming back to life again to fight eternally. And because of that, this living mountain that traditionally would digest the things that die within it is starting to starve and get hungry. And the forces of chaos are trying to recruit the mountain as a weapon for the Everchosen. Because, you know, Archeon could do with a giant living mountain to eat his foes. That'd be really useful right about
quite,
now.
Quite a handy thing to have in your back pocket, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So the Lumineth are trying to stop this. The Slaanesh warband trying to torture it because they get some kind of sick pleasure out of torturing the mountain.
That's Slaanesh.
The Chaos warband is trying to corrupt it and recruit it for the Everchosen. And the Seraphon are going in there with an old one crafted bomb to destroy the mountain.
Fair enough.
One way of solving a problem.
Exactly, yeah, just blow it up with skink bombs. So, yeah, so we've got this hunger mechanic where it basically represents the hunger of the mountain. Now, there's not many cards that refer to that within this deck. However, I imagine this might be something that we see. We've seen a vampire warband, potentially. Hunger would be a quite good mechanic to to build into a vampire faction if they're, you know, feasting on blood, for example.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's...
It might be like the... do you know, we see the different, like, set armor sets and weapon sets that are spread out amongst the different warbands. So you normally get, like, a pack of 30 or whatever sealed deck that you can use with a warband when you buy it in a box, but then there's some extra cards thrown in there as well. A lot of those cards are more useful to other warbands, which is sort of the incentive to collect everything. But quite a lot of times you see, like, the Urgrub armor set split across different warbands. It might be like there's different hunger cards split across the different warbands that you can look out for.
Yeah, and I have a feeling that'll be the case, along with the primacy stuff as well, where you'll want to get them all. Because like I said earlier, it's kind of a collectible card game thing. You can play with just the pack that comes with your warband, but if you want to do it competitively, you're probably all going to want to pick up all the expansions to get all the various cards. Very handily, I think Games Workshop does update the website to show what cards come in what expansion as well, if you do need a specific one, which is pretty good.
They have been pretty hot on that when new boxes have come out, to be fair.
You know, it's not like Magic where it's just blind cards and, you know, my box I buy is different contents than Dave's box that he buys. It's, you know, set decks of cards, which is much better. What is also set are the two starter warband decks as well. Now, in previous expansions, the starter deck has been a combination of generic cards and unique faction-specific cards. This time, every card in Mayari's Purifiers and every card in the Dread Pageant are unique to that warband.
That's interesting.
With an extra deck of cards that are all generic ones that can be done for anyone. So a bit of an interesting change. And I think it kind of continues with what we saw last edition, where you get a warband, you get a deck designed for that warband, playing off all the mechanics for that warband as a self-contained thing. And then you'll get an extra deck of cards to customize any deck. Yeah. I think that's a better way of doing it. Where in the past they've normally had some warband specific, some generic, and then the same again in kind of like the extra cards deck, haven't they?
They have, yeah.
Where now it's all your warband ones are in your warband deck, and then you can swap them out for your generic ones. Makes things a lot easier to build your decks as well, I think.
And also, yeah, straight away you'll be able to see, kind of as soon as you start having a couple of games, how your warband works.
Yeah, so speaking of the warband, I mean, one of the selling points to me is the absolutely gorgeous models in there. So we've got Mayari's Purifiers, who are a Lumineth Realm Lords warband, who are really cool. We've got Bahana, who is the bull-headed guys. You're better with Lumineth classes, Jay.
The Stone Guard.
So he's obviously something that we've seen before. And we've got Sonala, the hunter, who is the archer. And again, we've seen archers for the Lumineth. What are a little bit different, a Mayari-like caller, the leader. This is like another wizard type by the look of things, with an owl. It'll be interesting to see what the rules are like. They should be on the Games Workshop site now. It's up for pre-order. I haven't actually looked to see what those guys do.
Take a look.
Another wizard type for the Lumineth is pretty cool. But what appeals to me is Aline, or Eileen. Come on, Eileen, the Mind's Edge. She is a, for want of a better word, a swordmaster.
Yeah.
She's got the white tower on her kind of banner behind her. And she's such a cool model. Such a cool model. If they did Swordmasters for Lumineth, I'd be all in with that. Because they were always my favourite unit for the High Elves.
Yeah, they were always pretty badass.
And these were really fun to paint
she's
up as well.
She's got cool rules as well.
Has she?
Two attacks with her Sunmetal Greatsword. Hits on a 2+, wounds on a 2+, rend -1, damage 1. Sixes do mortal wounds, sixes to hit do mortal wounds.
So yeah, I take it you'd be adding these guys to your Lumineth army then, Jay.
I'm just looking at the thingy now. Interestingly, the Mayari Lightcaller, the wizard, has the Emetrica keyword. Does that mean he's a stone mage, Joe? The same as the Alarith stone mage? Yeah,
he may well be. He may well be. I think the only new like class that we've seen is the Swordmaster, isn't it? I think it's a different clan of Lumineth. But yeah, really cool. They have a interesting Inspire mechanic, where as soon as your attack, defense, or cast, if you can cast, is all successes, you inspire.
Right.
So it's a bit of a, I suppose, leaves it to fate a little bit, where you know, if you're unlucky, you can never inspire if you're rolling badly over the whole game. But what does help that a little bit is they've got an ether quartz mechanic. Now, obviously, the Lumineth use ether quartz. At the start of the game, you give every one of your warriors a piece of ether quartz, and you can spend it to re-roll the dice, essentially.
Right. So more chances of getting those successes.
Yeah. However, there are cards in the deck that play off if you have an ether quartz token, then plus one to hit, re-roll the dice, that kind of stuff. So it's kind of weighing up whether you want to spend the ether quartz for rerolls or keep hold of them to play off the kind of upgrades that you've given them in their deck.
Yeah.
So yeah, pretty fun. I quite like them. There's some ridiculous stuff. The Archer base has a range of 4. When she's inspired, she's got a range of 5. Sure. So yeah, they are pretty good. All of them, apart from the Greatsword, have got kind of ranged attacks as well. So they're going to be able to stay at arm's length and deal some serious damage. So they sound pretty fun. What do you guys think of the models?
I think they are so nice. I'm a big fan of both sides. I don't think there's a duff model in any either of the warbands.
Whether you use the Lumineth warband as a unit in Age Sigmar, or you take each individual model and make them like the champions of their respective units, I think they are cool. It's good to see the Lumineth battle tome. We've always said it's a bit thin of the number of units in there, so it's good to see the range expanded. Now we've got the Swordmaster in there.
Yeah, definitely. And it's more likely that we're going to see that, knowing what we know now about the Slaanesh range as well. So the Slaanesh warband is all new models, essentially. And just the other day, we had a teaser of some more models for the Slaanesh range. The leader is Vasilic the Gifted. He is kind of like a mortal kind of lord, something that we haven't seen for a while. Certainly wasn't in the last Slaanesh book. He's really, really cool. He has a reaction where after doing an attack action, he can deal one damage to a fighter or heal one damage to a fighter.
All right.
Which is weird. And you're thinking, oh, well, why do you want to do damage to yourself? Well, the Slaanesh Inspire mechanic, as soon as there's 6 wound counters on the board, friend or foe, the entire Slaanesh warband inspires. So, so you may want to cause damage to yourself in order to trigger that. And then he can heal as well. So, yeah, there could be some shenanigans going on. Because, you know, there's not the Slaanesh. They like a bit of pain. They're a bit weird like that. So, yeah, really interesting stuff.
That's so Slaanesh.
We've got Hadzu, who is the archer. She's really cool. Range of 3. After she does an attack action, instead of driving the target back, they can push the target 1 hex. So if you've got someone standing next to a dangerous tile, shoot them and then she can push them into it. Again, getting some more damage up there and getting some kind of board control. We've got Glizette, who's kind of the spear-wielding one. The fighter always counts as being on guard because they're keeping him at length with the spear. And then we've got Slake Slash, the fetish gear wearing Slangor, who is by far my favorite model in the box. They've got a reaction that after the attack action, you can deal a damage to Slake Slash or heal 1 damage. So again, you can get that inspire up by doing some damage to the enemy, doing some damage to yourself, and quickly get inspired. So yeah, I think both of these warbands have got some quite interesting inspire mechanics that are quite unique.
Yeah. I mean, it must be hard to keep them original with all these warbands that are coming out.
But, yeah, exactly.
They're doing a good job to make them fit the warband.
Yeah, and there's some. I'm going to go through all the cards now because there's a lot of cards in here. But there's a one in there that you pick a fighter. They are uninspired and cannot inspire again until the end of the round. So you can just shut down any like, you know, really cool characters that have great inspire conditions.
Yeah, I remember a card like that from a previous edition, but I'm sure it stops you inspiring for the rest of the game, which I always felt was a bit harsh.
Yeah, definitely. So, some interesting stuff. And again, the Slaanesh models are amazing and a joy to paint up. They are push fit. The Lumineth were a little bit hard to put together. There was a couple of pieces I did need to glue. But on the whole, they tend to just go together fine, just pushing them together. And yeah, that is a quick look at Diacast. Now, unfortunately, we've not been able to play it because of the world at present. So we are super looking forward to getting some games on with this. It's definitely a good box. Now, I think last week I kind of turned my nose up at the price. I did some research and it's actually the same price as Beastgrave. Now, right. Beastgrave itself was an increase in price from the earlier ones. And I suppose the question is, if it's worth it for you or not, is based on if you're going to be using both those warbands, I suppose. Because really, the primacy token, you can get away with using something else. Yeah. But if you're a completionist, you probably want those generic cards from the deck anyway.
Yeah.
And the new tiles, updated rulebook's always handy. So really, if you're using, I don't know, one of these warbands, then yeah, definitely worth your money. If you're not using either of the warbands and you're not too interested in being super competitive, you might be better off just picking up the season 4 warband that you want.
Yeah.
Because I believe all the rulebook and everything's on the Underworld's website as well.
Fair enough. That's pretty handy.
Yeah, I mean, myself, I like the models, so I'll be picking them up as I go along. So I should be building my deck collection as we go along. But I know for some people, you know, £50 is a lot to drop on a game. That said, it is a self-contained two-player game, so it is the kind of thing that you can play with your other half or your kids at the minute. So not a bad option at the moment, considering we can't really play a game of Warhammer.
Exactly, yeah. Really quick and easy to pick up and play. And hopefully we'll do some streams of it or something in the future. That'd be really fun.
Definitely.
If we can do. Matt, you have done a really good written review and a video review over on sprucesandbrews.com and also on our YouTube channel. So I'll make sure all the relevant links are in the podcast notes so you can check those out and go a little bit deeper into the box itself, but yeah, really, really good value, I think, personally. Excellent stuff. That wraps up our main topic for this week's podcast. We have got the community top 3 picks coming up soon, but we're going to run through ours first of all. And so we move on to this week's top 3, where we're going to be discussing the top 3 gift ideas for the hobbyists in your life. So I'm going to start off with my third choice this week, and it is the Humble Painting Handle. Now, when this thing came out, I actually couldn't get on with it, but now I use it all the time. I actually really need to get more of them because I'm trying to do stuff in like blocks of 5 models, like in small batches. And it's not really a massive pain, but taking them on and off the paint handle, it'd be easier if they were all just on a paint handle. But they're really good. They're really easy to use. I don't know what the new one's like. I don't know. Have you guys picked up the new one yet?
No, so the new one's got a wider base but a thinner stem to make it easier to get your brush underneath it, which was one of the criticisms of the original painting handle. Sometimes it was a bit awkward to get to the underside of the model.
Yeah.
I am using it myself. Shout out to community member Garfy. I don't know if you've seen his stuff. He does a lot of Warcry stuff. But he's actually sells his own one, which has like an arm that you can rest your finger on to steady your hand as well.
Oh, that's good. Cool. That's clever. But yeah, they're really cheap. It doesn't matter what army you collect. It's a universal product to help you with your hobbying. Mm. Jay, what is your third choice?
My third choice is a audiobook from the Black Library to whack on while you're doing your hobbying.
Yeah.
So this week I've been listening to The Birth of the Imperium whilst I've been painting up the Imperial Fists. So you just end up like losing yourself for a few hours while you're sort of listening to the book. And you sort of find you've painted a lot more than you thought you would have got painted by the time you finish.
Yeah, good call. Good shout.
I use Audible. I think you do as well, Jay, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's you know, an audiobook can cost between 20 and 40 quid. So being able to get it for like £7.99 a month is pretty good. And keep an eye out in your inbox as well, because they often have deals. I resubscribed like yesterday, and it was like £3.99 for 4 months or something. So yeah, pretty good.
Excellent stuff. Matt, what is your third choice?
So my third choice is a White Dwarf subscription.
Yeah.
So White Dwarf has gone through a few phases throughout time. It's gone from, and you know, being fair, I think it's sometimes it's been very much a hobby catalogue, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Where the focus has been on selling toys and here's pictures of all the new models coming out. Yeah. Obviously, with the internet, though, we see all that on Warhammer Community. We get it in the Sunday preview videos. White Dwarf doesn't really need that content anymore, and it doesn't have it anymore. It very rarely features stuff that's currently out. Instead, it's now part of the design studio, so you get full rules in there, full stories in there. There's a lot more actual usable content in White Dwarf than there has been as long as I've been reading it. So, yeah, I really rate White Dwarf at the minute and think a subscription is a really good present for somebody.
Yeah, yeah, well, I mean, the White Dwarf that I've got this week, you've got the normal White Dwarf stuff, and then I've got a stat card for a new Aeronautica plane. You've got the new Bugman Warcry card, Acorn the Squirrel Blood Bowl card. There's an Adeptus Titanicus set of cards in there, Necromunda card, plus, like I said, your regular White Dwarf. So you're getting a ton of content in there nowadays.
I mean, if you look at, I'm a big fan of the Inquisition. We had Inquisitor rules in White Dwarf months before we had Pariah. So without White Dwarf, you know, I wouldn't have had those updated rules for ages. That I had to wait until Psychic Awakening. So, yeah, it's really cool to have that rules content in there. My second choice is a little bit similar to your third choice, Jay, and that is a Black Library novel. So if you're buying for a hobbyist and you know they're collecting a new army, then get them a book to accompany that if you're not sure what kits are going to be. And also, let's be honest, kits can be quite expensive, so a book is a little bit of a cheaper gift. But I always find Black Library novels are really like inspirational. And if you only have to look at the fact that we're talking a lot about the Siege of Terror and Horus Heresy at the moment, and a lot of that is all based on the hype and the enjoyment of the book series. That's basically getting us back into the game and getting us wanting to play in the Heresy. So the books are such a fantastic source of inspiration and are a really, really enjoyable read. You know, they're up there with some of the, you know, authors that aren't, you know, books that aren't Warhammer, you know, your more sort of general sci-fi and fantasy. So even if you're not a massive fan of Warhammer, in fact, they're still a really enjoyable read.
Yeah, definitely. There's been the Horus Heresy series in particular kind of exposed a lot of people to the Warhammer universe because they ended up on like bestseller lists and stuff, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think Master of Mankind won ever so many awards.
Master of Mankind, such a good book.
Jay, what is your second choice?
Master of Mankind, no. I would say the Citadel mold line remover. Yes. So I always used to use my hobby knife to shave off mold lines for years and years. I did that, and you'd always shave a bit too much off, and you know, a nice rounded surface will have a little bit of a flat patch on it. And it was only a couple of years ago that I sort of discovered the mold line remover, and it's only a little tool like with a metal sort of peg thing on the end, and you just scrape it along the mold line. Really easy to use, and it really does improve the finish of your model if you do manage to just spend a few minutes taking the mold lines off. And this tool just makes it really easy, and you just get a good result from it. So for such a little tool and such a little problem, I think you get a good result from it. So
yeah, I think removing mold lines does put off a lot of people when you're trying to do it with a knife, and this can't damage the model with it. You just literally scrape it along the joins and Bob's your uncle. It's really, really good tool.
Awesome. Matt, what is your second choice?
So my second choice now, I've broken these down into the second choice is for someone who's maybe new to the hobby, has not played it before. And I would go with something along the lines of a battle box or starter box. So something along the lines of Soul Wars or Indomitus, or a battle box like Shadow and Pain, perhaps. You will get the core, in the case of a battle box, you'll get the core kind of rules and two armies. In the case of the starter boxes, very often nowadays, you will get the full rule book plus two armies. And in the case of the new 40k starter box, I forget what it's called, the kind of replacement to Indomitus, it actually comes with scenery and a board to play on as well.
Yeah. And Command Edition.
Command Edition, that's it. And that's, you know, when I got into the hobby, I think my parents bought me and my brother the second edition Warhammer 40,000 boxed set, which came with, I want to say, 10 Space Marines, a load of orcs, a cardboard dreadnought, and some cardboard scenery. They've come on a long way since then, haven't they?
They have.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a nice way of, if you think the rule book swap, £30-40 for not really that much more, you're getting two armies that, you know, even if that's not the army that they eventually stick with, you can paint them up, get the feel for painting models, see if it's something you're interested in, and get the feel of how the army, how the game plays using two armies that will work well against each other. I think they're really good. And then Battle Boxes kind of takes that concept, but then is usable by kind of more established hobbyists as well, in that these are just where the starter boxes are kind of bespoke sprues that go together one way. The battle boxes tend to have the actual kits in there as well. So a nice way of padding out a force. If, like me, for Shadow and Paint, you've got a Slaanesh force and a Daughters of Cain force, brilliant. Extra kits for both of your armies.
Excellent stuff. We're already round to our top choices. And my top choice can be seen as a great present and also a very dangerous present. Because this is very much for the sort of experienced gamers. And that is buying your hobbyist friend just a random character model from whatever, you know, whatever they're really into. Say, for example, Matt, you're like, you know, I've always fancied a Adeptus Mechanicus army. Well, Matt, I might buy you a Tech Priest Dominus. You might then build, paint that model, and next thing you know, you've got 2,000 points of Adeptus Mechanicus. So it can be a bit dangerous, but it gives your sort of hobbyist friend something new to paint that they might not necessarily have painted before. It gives them a new kind of challenge to try something different, and it could lead to them getting either a Crusade force or a full match play tournament army. Who knows? But I always think it's fun to just, you know, pick up a random character and paint it. And in that same, I mean, that kind of works with like the warbands for Warcry and Underworlds and stuff. Even if you don't intend to buy a full army, they're really sort of good gifts to get people that they've got a little self-contained thing that they can build and paint and see if they enjoy. So, but I'm gonna, yeah, my top choice is a nice character model for one of your hobbyist friends.
I like that. That's a really cool idea. A nice little palette cleanser as well. Say if, you know, someone paints chaos all the time, get them an elf, something different to paint.
Yeah, definitely. I like stuff like, I know our local Games Workshop store are doing like a bit of a lucky dip thing at the moment, where you basically buy a random model and then you build and paint it, and that's like the painting competition for the month as well. That really appeals. I think that's really fun. Jay, what is your top choice?
Mine's pretty similar, actually. Like like a little model, a bit different than what you normally paint, just to maybe inspire you to start a new army. Like a Phantom Titan for the Eldar. you could buy one of these for your friends, you know, someone who maybe you know who likes Eldar a lot. You can just buy that for them, like a little surprise gift. And it just gives them something different to paint up that, you know, they're not that used to painting up, really. I think it's just quite a nice gesture. Yeah. The Phantom type, with a glaive, of course. One glaive and one gun, I think, just in case.
Yeah,
Of course.
Other
end of the financial scale of gifting there. Matt, do you want to finish us off with your top choice?
So, yeah, this is for the what do you buy the wargamer who's got everything? Well, you can never go wrong with dice, can you? Games Workshop do a lot of different dice, limited edition dice, cylindrical dice in the Lumineth Realm Lords case. And, yeah, I think these are a nice little thing that it doesn't matter if maybe they've already got models or they've got books. Dice will always be appreciated because, you know, they're an integral part of the game. Coincidentally, we may have to get some Sprues and Brews dice on sale when we can.
Yeah, I think that would be the, I mean, who wouldn't want that on their Christmas list?
That would be the ultimate Christmas gift, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. I think that's a Sprues and Brews top three top choice is a set of Sprues and Brews dice. Guaranteed to make you win at tournaments. Little asterisks may not be guaranteed.
Guaranteed. Seriously, if people would be interested in some Sprues and Brews dice, though, let us know over on Twitter, because if enough of you say yes, we can get some printed up.
Yeah. Brilliant. That brings us to the end of our top three choices, but we do have one more segment left on this week's podcast, and that is the community top three picks. And so we're into the final segment of this week's podcast, and it's time to go through the community top three picks. Matt, what have we got on Twitter?
So Jim Duduku says, cash so you can buy what you want. Fair enough. Number two, one of the new painting handles. Number three, one of those elusive Necron Battle Force boxes. Yeah, they were very tasty, weren't they?
They were very good.
The Eradication Legion.
Yeah. Warrior 40K says a start collecting or combat patrol box to start or boost an army. Dice for their army and a hero type character that they're missing from their list. Overton says a subscription to Warhammer TV. Loads of quality entertainment there. Yes, there is. Yeah. Andrew Sims says one of the starter sets, e.g. Soul Wars and Domitius Catacombs, a Black Library novel, or a Citadel Brush collection. That's a good choice. And Kerry Robson says a paint palette pad, a mould line remover, and a decent hobby light. Yes, I will give a second to a decent hobby light. That makes a massive difference in being able to paint.
Yeah.
Yeah, great choices there. What is next week's top three, Matt?
So this week we found out hobby gifts. Next week, just we want you to just tell us what you want from Santa, hobby-wise. So where we've been, you know, sensible choices maybe this week, like a painting handle or a starter set. Go all out there. What you want from Santa. So that Phantom Titan, Jay, put
two
it on your
list. Two Phantom Titans.
Why stop at two? It's a top three.
No, just being silly there, Dave. You're being silly there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Take it
too
far.
I'm sorry. We will, at this point, announce the winners of the Silver Tower competition that we've been running for the past couple of weeks, where you can win some summoning stones for the Silver Tower mobile game. I will put all of the entries onto spruceandbrews.com, but the winning two were Mike Lodes' Dark Oath Chieftain and HPL's Black Coach from the, I can't remember, the ghosty guy.
Nighthorn.
So yeah, well done, guys. I will be in touch with both of you over Twitter in the next couple of days to find out what device you're running and get those codes over to you. But thank you to everybody who entered. And like I say, all your entries will be on spruceandbrews.com before the end of the week. So yeah, thank you very much. And I think that wraps us up for another week. We're slowly getting towards our New Year break, guys. It's Christmas is just around the corner. But we've still got a couple of episodes yet, so we'll be back again next week with some more hobby goodness. So until then, have a great week of hobby. Bye.
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 Thanks for listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast. Make sure you check out our social media at Sprues and Brews on Twitter and facebook.com/Sprues and Brews. And of course, you can always head over to the website, spruesandbrews.com, for all the latest Warhammer news.